Shabbat Shalom. Thank you, Rod, for pitch hitting on reading Torah. I think that's really amazing jumping in and doing that at the last second. Thank you very much. And thank you to Karen jumping in to do to lead us in prayer and liturgy. So, somebody tell me, what is it that gives you joy in life? What do you delight in? Oh, come on. Be honest. Horses. Yes. Yes.
Sleeping in.
Yes. That is whatever it is. You yearn for it. We yearn to sleep in. What? Who else?
I said grandbabies.
Oh, grandbabies. Yeah. I once asked this question I was doing a guest spot at a Christian church, and somebody yelled out coffee. I actually said, "Oh, you know what? I'd spoke somewhere else, you know, across town, and somebody there said the same thing, you know." So, did you know that in Scripture, it tells us what we should delight in? In the Psalms, it says, "If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand wither, and let my tongue dry up and stick to the roof of my mouth." In other words, I shrivel up and I get dehydrated to the point of death. If I forget you and forget to have Jerusalem as my highest joy. I've seen those words inscribed on the walls of the bus station in Jerusalem. And I've heard them sung by a band, hooked up, set up on a stage there in the plaza of the hotel, the Western Wall in Jerusalem. There was a band that was singing a contemporary tune to those very ancient lyrics. The book of Echa, or Lamentations, tells us that Jerusalem is to be the joy of the whole earth. Or it says that Jerusalem has been, in the past, the joy of the whole earth. There was a discussion, a couple discussions with people in the last week or two with the theme of the land of Israel. And what it means for us as Messianic believers, as Jewish believers, what is the meaning of the land? And it's a huge topic, and it's more than can be unpacked at once, but it's like, that's a great question, and that's a wonderful theme. And so we're going to pull this apart and explore some of these things together. I'd like to begin with just a discussion of the word Jerusalem. I meant to have it written on one of my dry erase boards so I could hold it up and show you. Jerusalem, or in Hebrew, Yerushalayim is made up of two words. Compound words are actually very rare in Hebrew. We say supermarket in English. It's a compound noun put together with different words. Hebrew doesn't do that very often. They'll stick pronouns or something on a word, but seldom will multiple nouns go together in biblical Hebrew. But Jerusalem is made up of two nouns, or actually a verb and two nouns. First is from a story in Genesis chapter 14. Here is Abraham meets a king named Melchizedek. The king of righteousness is what his name means. He is a righteous king. And Abraham has an encounter with him. And Melchizedek is, we're told, the king of a place called Salem. So, unfortunately, you know, we ended up with the Salem, Massachusetts, which is only known for one thing in American history. Unfortunately, not something wholeness and peace related, but it gets anglicized to Salem. Josephus, who was a Jewish writer during the biblical period, during a contemporary of, say, Shimon Kepha, Simon, otherwise known as Peter. Josephus was a contemporary, lived at the same time as what we read about in the book of Acts, for instance. Josephus points out that this place where Melchizedek was king, this city was the same place as Jerusalem. That this root of Salem, if you will, has the same letters in Hebrew that make up the word shalom. He was the king of this place that was to be wholeness and peace. Shalom. Josephus identifies it with as Shalom, identifying that place as Jerusalem. So Jerusalem is the place that is to be peace. It is the place that is to be the vision of wholeness, completeness. Of course, my definition for Shalom is nothing missing, nothing broken. And Yerushalayim, Shalayim, you have that word, the same letters from Shalom in the second half of Yerushalayim, the Shin Lamed Mem. The first part of the name Jerusalem, or Yerushalayim, also comes from the book of Genesis. In Genesis chapter 22, God tells Abraham, it's also in Abraham, both of them are Abraham stories, God tells Abraham to take his son to a place called Mount Moriah, and there, or as we anglicize that to Mount Moriah, and so it's not a place for carry. It's a place where Abraham was to sacrifice, to offer his son this promise, this gift that God had promised for decades. And this son that had then grown up, to offer his son back to God. To give up, to lay on the altar the hopes and dreams and promises that God had given. And to take his son to this place. Of course, in later in Scripture, we know that Mount Moriah is the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. The sacrifice, of course, the sacrifice of Isaac was the first sacrifice in the Bible that occurred on the Temple Mount, where later priests would serve in the temple, offering sacrifices for families of Israel or for the entire nation of Israel. For centuries and centuries, sacrifices would be offered there in this place. Every sacrifice that ever was offered on the Temple Mount looks back to the original sacrifice on that hill, which was the offering up, the binding of Isaac, what in Hebrew is called the Akedah, where Isaac is bound and laid on the altar. Here comes the rain. Does Isaac end up dying that day on the altar on Mount Moriah?
No.
They're right. You're right. Very good. You've read it before. No, because what happens? God intervenes. And what does God do when he intervened in that situation?
He provided a sacrifice.
That's right. What, by the way, did he provide?
A ram.
A ram. And what does Abraham say when he looks up and there's a ram? By the way, the ram was caught by its horns in thorns. There's a tie-in to a later son of the father who was offered as a sacrifice, whose head was caught in a crown of thorns. Of course, there's linkages between Isaac and Yeshua and the sacrifice, the near sacrifice of Isaac and the sacrifice of Yeshua. But that's a different sermon. What did Abraham say? Does anybody remember what Abraham said when he saw the ram?
He provided.
Adonai Yireh. Adonai Yireh. It's, by the way, not Jehovah Jireh.
Yes.
That's a mess up of Hebrew beyond proportion. There's no Jehovah in the Bible anyway. And there's no J in Hebrew, of course. There's no Jireh. It's Yireh. Adonai Yireh. The Lord, and what does it mean? The Lord provides. But actually, do you know what? Yireh, you Hebrew experts, and students in the room, Yireh is the verb what? Very good. The verb to see. From ra'ah. In this case, in the imperfect tense, yireh, the Lord will see. The Lord will see. So the idea of provision is a good poetic translation. The Lord provides because he sees to it. When the Lord sees, he responds, right? Thus he provides. But the phrase Adonai Yireh literally means the Lord will see to it. Abraham says this. Adonai Yireh, the Lord will see because on the mountain it will be seen. It will be seen. Yireh. Yireh, Yod Resh, in Hebrew, becomes the beginning of the name of the city that would be established on that mountain. Yerushalayim. Jerusalem, of course, I just said there's no J in Hebrew. We call it Jerusalem and we call it Judah. And somehow it gets Latinized to Judas. But so Jerusalem is Yerushalayim. The Yeru at the beginning is inspired by that encounter that Abraham has where God will provide because he sees. The place of vision, the place of sight. So, Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, is named for two things from the story of Abraham. The encounter with his son Isaac and the encounter with a guy named Melchizedek, who is the king of someplace right there nearby where he offered his son. Jerusalem is both the place of shalom, of wholeness and completeness, and it's also the place of vision, of provision, because it's a place where God provides. It helps us understand when we talk about Jerusalem, where that name came from in Hebrew. It helps us understand why that place. And ultimately, the more important question is, what is this place to be? What is it to become? It is the city of vision, the city of provision, the city of peace and wholeness. Yeru and Shalom. Yerushalayim. In the liturgy that we recited just a few minutes ago, on page 92, we recited a paragraph called Ein Kamocha. There is none like you. Ein Kamocha. Actually, these verses, these sentences on page 92 are each a verse from the Bible. And so this just isn't made up. Most Jewish liturgy is either directly from Scripture or are phrases of Scripture that have been patched and wove together. Patch isn't a good word. Skip that. Wove together. It's not just haphazardly patched. But note the sentence. Here we even mentioned it. Compassionate Father, may it please you to favor Zion with your goodness. Rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. We mentioned it right there in our liturgy. If you'll look down at the bottom of the page, that same page, there's a verse that, again, we recited from the Bible. It's that verse that says, Ki mitzion tetze Torah. From Zion will go forth the Torah. The word of the Lord, Mirushalayim, from Jerusalem. This verse is from Isaiah chapter 2, which speaks of the nations, the nations. We're not talking about Israel. We're talking about the nations going up to Jerusalem. Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord so we can learn the ways of the Lord. This is not Jews speaking. This is non-Jews, Gentiles, saying, hey, come on, let's go up the mountain of the Lord. Of course, the mountain of the Lord is the Temple Mount. It's in Jerusalem. And come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, because Torah will go forth from Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. More than from Mount Sinai, The word of the Lord goes from Jerusalem. Rabbi Paul makes a midrashic discussion about that in the book of Galatians, talking about Torah coming from Mount Sinai and Torah coming from Jerusalem, and comparing what, as he describes, those two ladies, and makes a midrash. So Paul is going to accentuate the word of the Lord coming from Jerusalem. The nations are invited to stream to Jerusalem. Jerusalem's created to be a very cosmopolitan city. People of different ethnic backgrounds, cultures, colors, languages, families. I have a series of verses. Could I have someone volunteer to turn to Psalm 96? Raise your hand. Anybody? Nobody. Okay. Psalm 97. Tracy. And last, Psalm 98. Excuse me, 99. I can't read. Okay. Karen, please read verses 7 through 9 of Psalm 96.
Give Adonai his due, you families from the peoples. Give Adonai his due of glory and strength. Give Adonai the glory due to his name. Bring an offering and enter his courtyards. Worship Adonai in holy splendor. Tremble before him, all the earth.
All the earth is invited to tremble before the Lord. Ascribe to the Lord, all you families of peoples. He's addressing the nations. He's not talking about the tribes of Israel. Peoples refer to the ethnic groups, not necessarily geopolitical nations, but ethnic groups. By the way, just when you're reading scripture, keep in mind that the idea of nations as we know it is actually a very modern idea. 300 years ago, we didn't have nations like we have nations today, like a geopolitical group. Nations were like people groups, you know, like a city would be a nation, or the group of people, a particular, okay, you get the idea. So here in this passage, The peoples of the earth are invited to go up to encounter the Lord, to give honor to the Lord. Okay, Tracy, verses 6 through 9 of Psalm 97. The nations are invited to quit serving and making their alternative sources of reliance, otherwise called idols, and invited to experience the Most High. It's interesting that it says that Zion will be glad. Jerusalem will be pleased when the nations stop serving their idols. Did you catch that? Zion is happy. Zion's poetic term for Jerusalem. Jerusalem will be pleased. as well as the daughters of Judah, the Jewish people will be pleased and happy when the nations gather into this cosmopolitan place. Less verses 1 and 2 of Psalm 99. God is exalted not just in Israel. We see that in the Psalms, how God dwells in the praises of his people Israel. Where does God dwell? He dwells in praise of Israel. That's a very mystical idea. In the Psalms. But here it says that God will also receive the praises of the nations. And so Jerusalem is invited to be this place where the nations flow in and among the walls of Jerusalem. Unfortunately, that is not always what happens. There are times that instead of making Jerusalem this cosmopolitan place where all are welcome to worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it turns out that Jerusalem becomes a stumble. This is Psalm 48, verses 4 through 8. For the kings assemble themselves, and they passed by together. They saw it, then they were amazed. They were terrified, and they fled in alarm. Panic seized them, anguish, as a woman in childbirth. With the east wind you break the ships of Tarshish. As we have heard, so have we seen in the city of the Lord of hosts, in the city of our God. God will establish her forever. Here is the image of God gaining victory over the kings that enter to try to disrupt, trying to overthrow. Here's another discussion about the kings trying to conquer God's. Instead of moving in and among, they attempt to move on and against and over. This is Psalm 2. Psalm 2, verse 2. The kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed ones, saying, let us tear their fetters apart and cast away. They consult with each other against the Lord and against his anointed. So there are two responses. There is the response of the nations to move in and among Jerusalem. That's one response that the nations can take. But then there's the alternate response. It's the antagonistic response, moving over and against Jerusalem. We see this in the book of Psalms in different places. We also see it in prophecy of the things yet to happen. The book of Zechariah chapter 2 talks about how there is a battle for Jerusalem. The world battle is a battle for Jerusalem. And in chapter 14, it talks about the nations moving against Israel. But very beautifully, at the end of chapter 14 of Zechariah, it talks about how the nations, some from the nations, will choose to go up to Jerusalem to observe Sukkot, the holiday of the Sukkah, of